Senate Special Committee on Education. We have with us Senator Davis, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, Senator Wilkins, and myself, Stevens. We're going to be dealing today with a bill similar to one we've dealt with the last time, and that's House Bill 18. And we have with us Representative Kevin Meyer. Would you come forward, Representative Meyer, and tell us about this bill?
Would bring my staff and Mr. Trubosky, if that's okay, Mr. Chairman.
Please do.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. You're absolutely right. This bill is exactly the same bill as you heard previously, the Senate Bill 73. So I'm not going to bore you with reading or highlighting the bill again, but basically just doubles the current WAMI program from 10 to at least 20. We can go more than 20 if we feel like the need is there. So with that, we're entertaining questions if any can, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Representative Myers. I did get a chance to read through securing an adequate number of physicians for Alaska's needs, and I think that was the basis from which your bill evolved, the clear need that's expressed for in 10, 20 years for medical doctors in this state, and how that we're facing a real crisis. But it struck me as odd that of all the choices that were given, and mainly four major choices of what we could do to solve the problems, the goals and strategies on page 6, including recruitment of physicians to Alaska, increase retention of physicians by improving the practice environment of Alaska. Of all of the choices, you've chosen the most expensive one. And not that there's anything wrong with a WAMI program, and I have great respect for it. But what about the other options out here? Why aren't we dealing with those?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think we're focusing right now on the WAMI program itself, because that's a program that's had success. Almost 80% of the students that go to the medical school at the University of Washington do come back and practice in Alaska. Certainly, I think some of these other suggestions we want to start looking at, but the main focus was to try to get some more students in the pipeline, because it's going to take 4 years for them to get, at the minimum, to get through that program and to come back. And plus, like I said, the success rate's good. I think some of the other things they were suggesting is recruiting programs, and I think that's the next phase. Once we get the students in school and get them going, then we start looking at other things that we can do.
Oh, thank you, Representative. I think you're right that we need to take all of these approaches. Questions or comments anyone has at this time? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Meyer is co-chair of finance in the other body. What are the plans if the price of oil drops to significantly lower levels? From your perspective, as how we're going to deal with the increased fiscal note that's going to be following this bill and with these 10 more slots at a minute.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, that's a very good question, and obviously this will become part of the operating budget now. It's something we'll have to deal with every year. But you know, there's no question that the medical costs in Alaska are high, and a lot of that has to do with the shortage of physicians to treat people medical problems. So either we pay for it now in the sense of getting more doctors up here, or we're going to pay for it later in the sense that if you have a shortage and your costs are going to go up. So I believe Senator Olson, it's going to be a wash, and having more physician care is extremely important and something we're just going to have to absorb in the budget.
One final question,
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, is that why this is a standalone bill that's being funded by itself? Why not wrap the WAMI students, or and especially the increase that's related to it, into the whole university budget? Obviously, there's been discussion as to that avenue and the money that the university normally gets. Why aren't we wrapping it into the university budget?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why we haven't looked at that approach of running it through the university's budget, and certainly open to that.
Actually, on our committee, we have an expert on the university budget. So there was, maybe you have some insights into that, Senator Wilk.
Maybe you could pick up the slack? Or, no.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I would guess, I hadn't thought of it, but I would guess it's best to keep it outside the program so that you have some control over it. If it gets into a $200 or $350 million single appropriation, it just, you lose track of it. So at least this way we have some sort of way to measure it and to guide it and monitor it and hold it accountable. That would be my thought.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. While we're on the subject of the university, maybe you could talk to us, Representative Meyer, about a little bit about the difference in the two bills, the Senate bill and the House bill, that have been companion pieces. In the Senate bill, there is a substantial university fiscal note of $330 million the first year, but it's been zeroed out in your bill. And maybe you could tell us, how do you create such magic? Is that that's a finance thing, right?
Mr. Chairman, that's... That's the power of the committee, I guess. It wasn't my idea. It was a motion made by one of the finance committee members that they couldn't understand why the cost would go up so much at the university by simply going from 10 students to 20 students, because obviously one professor should be able to teach 10 students and 20 students. And I don't recall what the other costs were involved there. But I think, I think that's something that needs to be worked with universities is to try to hone down what the true costs are and maybe what their original estimate that they put on their fiscal note is accurate, and it just needs more explanation.
Maybe the university can address that today if they could, so we could try and understand that a little bit better. Thank you. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regard to fiscal notes, Representative Meyer, are we dealing with fiscal note number 2 or fiscal note number 1? Number 1 dated 1/31, which shows zero increase in 08, but increases in the out years, and fiscal note 2 showing no increases at all.
Which one?
To answer your question through the chair, Senator Wilkin, the first fiscal note dated 1/31/07 is accurate. We won't start bearing those extra costs until 2009. And then the second fiscal note is the universities, and that's the one that the chairman brought up, was the universities that was zeroed out in House Finance.
I see.
I also think, Mr. Chairman, the reason why it was zeroed out was that we wanted to revisit this through the budgeting process. My counterpart, the chairman, co-chairman of finance, who has the operating budget, wanted to review that in the subcommittee.
So is
Senator, I'm going to pass you. This is the education one, right, university.
So is the fiscal note that's traveling with this bill from fiscal note number 1 the one that is the title an act amending functions and powers from the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education? Is that showing the zero increase in 08 and then a 505 increase in 09, et cetera? Is that what's traveling with this bill?
That's correct.
It is. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And I encourage everyone to take a glance at the other fiscal note for House Bill 18 that you may have that shows the university impact on the university. Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Wilkin.
Thank you. At the meeting we had last week on Senator Ellis's bill, we spoke on page 2 of the bill in paragraph A at the top of the page. Spoke about when the interest was going to start to accrue, and we had some discussion about that, and I'd be interested to know, Representative Meyer, if you had that discussion on the House side, and it would be my expectation that the bill ought to be changed in order to start the interest accruing at the beginning of residency, not at the end. But I'd be interested in your discussion you had over on the House side.
To the chair, Senator Wilkin, we didn't discuss the interest in committee. Is it my understanding that you don't want the interest to accrue? Or what? Maybe I don't understand.
Diane can explain this better than I, but if the purpose of the bill is to bring doctors back, mm-hmm. and they'll have to make a decision when they finish their residency about where they're going to practice. So the way the Lone Star is in effect today is that when they finish their medical school and they begin their residency, the interest on the loan starts to accrue. So whatever their outstanding balance is to the state, the interest clock, they don't have to pay it. It just accrues and is added to the balance of the loan that they had to get to where they are. So the clock starts at the beginning of residency. And what this bill does on lines 14 through 19 on page 2, it starts the clock at the end of residency. So they go through residency, say, for 2 years, and now the clock starts on interest. So we're moving that back whatever period of time. It seems to me that if we want to get people to come back to Alaska, we want that bill at the end as high as it can be. Because it's going to be forgiven anyhow if they come and practice for 5 years. So for a doctor that returns to Alaska after 5 years, it's transparent. He or she doesn't see it. So it just seems if we're trying to get doctors to Alaska that we would like that interest to stay as it is today, and that is starting to accrue at the time that residency begins and not ends.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Wilken, and then with your permission, I'd also like to ask Mr. Pulaski to weigh in on this. But I think if I understand your question or your point, the concern would be is that there's only room for 12 people to go through residency in Alaska at any given time, and I think all that's at Providence Hospital. So some of these students may want to do their residency outside the state, and they may want to specialize in surgery or something that could take 2 or 3 years before then they can come back and actually work in Alaska. So I don't know if we want to penalize them to just because the only place that they could take their residency was outside the state.
I don't think it's geographic specific.
If I may, Senator Wilken, through the chair, for the record, my name is, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Mike Pulaski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. The point that Representative Meyer is making about the unavailability of residency and the difficulty in residency is discussions that were had at the lower level, and that was the policy call some of the lower committees in the House made of not allowing interest to accrue to do the balance between getting people into the program where you have the hook to bring them back versus encouraging them to go pursue other programs. Perhaps the more important provision is actually in Section 3, which you'll see is the deletion of in the state, and that's in the repayment provisions. The discussion over whether or not interest should accrue during the residency program is a very fair one. The question of whether or not a person should have to repay during their residency program when they can't come back to the state to be a residency is a separate one. And when the committees looked at it, they balanced both of those issues together and decided to take them both. Of course, it is a policy call on whether or not interest accrues. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike.
Well,
Senator Walken.
I just haven't heard yet now from anyone why we would change existing law and give folks that aren't coming back to Alaska a break. And that's what it seems to me the bill does. So, Mr. Chairman, I can do a couple things. I have a conceptual amendment that's very easy. Or you could ask Diane Behrens to come and maybe perhaps speak a little bit about her thoughts on whether this should or shouldn't begin at the beginning of residency or at the end. But I think it needs to be fixed. And if Senator Huggins and Senator Olson are going to fix it at finance, that's fine. But this will be my only opportunity to correct what I consider to be a problem in this legislation.
Thank you, Senator Wilken, and we will take time to ask Ms. Behrens to come up and delve into that subject in a few minutes. Any further questions? Yes, Senator Olson.
Mr. Pulaski, I guess I'm not sure I equate the two issues that were brought up. Senator Wilken brought up a very important issue from a business standpoint, certainly, and has a valid reason for implementing interest to start accruing as soon as they finish with medical school or whenever they start residency. But how it relates to the other issue that you talked about, I guess I don't see the connection.
Senator Olson, through the chair, they were, the connection really was the whole discussion of what we are creating in the incentives in the program. Because WAMI, at the end of the day, is an incentive program. Get people into the program so we have the financial hook to make them come back to the state. Once they come back to Alaska, they will continue to practice here, is the general theory. In changing and looking at expanding the program, the discussion of what residencies were available at the lower committees was very important to some people about the accrual of interest. I was just trying to draw a point that we also changed Section 3 to affect the repayment provision for the state, and I was just trying to be clear about those are the two incentives that are being changed in the bill as well.
One last comment. The impression that I get, though, is that the hook is a little bit deeper by taking the conceptual amendment that Senator Wilkin just talked about. I guess the question I have to you now, and maybe to the representative, are you in favor of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, 8 o'clock's kind of early for me in the morning, so conceptual amendments take a while for me to register. But certainly, I would have no objection to the conceptual amendment that Senator Wilkin is making, because we do want these students to come back to Alaska and practice. And regardless of how much interest they've accrued, it's all going to be forgiven if they come back to Alaska. And that's what we want to do. It's my understanding 20% each year, so over 5 years, it's all forgiven. Now, if they decide to stay outside Alaska, then, yeah, they should pay the interest. Am I understanding your amendment?
Senator Wilkin.
Maybe I could make this a little easier on us. I would move and ask unanimous consent that on page 2, line 14 through 18, that the bill be amended as follows. The words in black in line 14 and 15 are stricken.
The underlined words?
Yes, the underlined words in black are stricken. The underlined and emboldened words on 16 through 18 are stricken, and the words inserted are the exact words that are in sentence 15, being the words in parens when the person terminates. So that line 14 would read as follows: interest imposed under this subsection begins to accrue when the person terminates studies under the medical education program. And that then takes us back to existing law.
Thank you, Senator. So your amendment is to reverse the amendment that had changed this and put it back to where it once was. Thank you.
The net effect is that the people's money is at risk with this whole loan program. And we start to accrue interest on that at-risk money at the beginning of residency, not at the end.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. Is there any objection to that?
Before we accept this amendment, would you have Diane come up to speak to that?
Certainly, if that's all right. Okay. We'll do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Meyer and Mr. Pawlowski.
Diane. Pawlowski's kind of. That's a tough one. That's why I call him. Thank you.
Before she comes up, Mr. Chairman, one of the questions that I have is why are we starting the interest to start at the beginning of residency as opposed to the end of medical school?
Hold that thought, Senator, and I'll ask the expert here.
One final comment, and the reason I say that is there have been people that have gone out, graduated from medical school, have no intention of going on and becoming clinically involved, don't do a residency, and may take a year off and go do something else altruistic and then come back and do a residency. And that's one of the reasons I just brought it up. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And make sure we get to that question in this testimony. Thank you, Ms. Behrens. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chair, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. And speaking to the question at hand, through the Chair, Senator Olson, In fact, Senator Wilkin's amendment does just that. The language will continue to read, begins to accrue when the person terminates study under the medical education program. So it will actually be at the end of their medical education program. With respect to the...
And make it perfectly clear, at the end of the program is at what point?
It's when they complete their graduate WAMI program.
Before they enter into an internship or after?
Yes, or prior to any break that might occur before they begin their residency. If they don't begin their residency for a year, interest will have accrued during that period of the break. With respect to the rationale behind the proposed change, that was something that came from the university. It wasn't a recommendation from the administration, because we understood the policy behind the interest beginning to accrue at the earlier point.
Thank you. Further questions of Ms. Behrens? Any comments in general on this piece of legislation, Ms. Behrens? Yes.
No, I was actually for you.
Mr. Chair, not particularly. It clearly there is a need for this expanded program. There doesn't seem to be any disagreement on that. I think we do have concerns about financial funding priorities in the years ahead, but at this point in time, it appears to be ripe to make this change.
Now, this may be out of your area of expertise, but the zeroing out of the university fiscal note, do you have any comments on that?
No, Mr. Chair, I don't.
Thank you. That's the university. Any other questions of Ms. Behrens? Thank you very much. Actually, I would like to ask the university if anybody is willing to come and talk to us about that issue. Yes, if you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
This is Pat Pitney with the university. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The fiscal note that was zeroed out at the House side, the rationale that was provided at the House level is that it would be discussed in the overall context of the university budget. In the Board of Regents budget, the funding for the WAMI program, both on the operating side and the capital side, is part of the Board of Regents request. As the budget is at this point, prior to any amendments from the governor, what's in the current legislation is $2.5 million below fixed costs and no new additional program funding. So right now the university is looking at a reduction of essentially $2.5 million against current programs and services. So in that light, it is at this point, there is no room for additions to the WAMI program. The from a timing perspective, the graduates or the students in the admissions process need to be contacted in the March-April timeframe for acceptance into the program. So the fiscal note, having a fiscal note goes forward, has some assurances to the program from the timing perspective. As you know, the overall budgets won't come through until the May, the last minute in May, likely. So from a timing perspective and from a success perspective for commitment to the program, the fiscal note process is probably the most expedient way to go. In terms of the overall, going back to earlier conversations and through the chair, Senator Olson, were you speaking of the WAMI portion or just the university overall portion of the budget? The comment that you'd made earlier.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Ms. Pitney, I was just looking at the whole system and trying to figure out an alternative way to go ahead and put it into place. I don't have the numbers in front of me as to whether it goes in out of the operating budget or is line itemed or has a special category. I was just looking at another way of funding it without having to go through a bill that's got a pretty significant fiscal note.
Right. From the university's perspective, we can accommodate either mechanism. The current WAMI program is part of our overall university budget and is funded within that context. This fiscal note would, over time, just be rolled into the overall university budget, but it would assign the funding, in the time frame of accepting a class for the fall of 07. And I think that's the goal of this this perspective. It still has to be fit within the overall context of the university budget. So.
Thank you, Ms. Pitney. Are you prepared to discuss the that fiscal note that I realize this is a little odd dealing with a fiscal note on another bill, but could you talk to us about what that fiscal note represents?
The fiscal note represents, in terms of on the cost side, in operating two additional faculty for the program, staff time, additional staff time, which accounts for about 44,000 of the fiscal note, and then additional costs outside of personnel, so travel, contractual, miscellaneous. On the capital side, last year a capital appropriation of $475,000 was approved and appropriated. The next $475,000 on the capital is in this budget. That totals a $950,000, and that is to accommodate lab and space, class space requirements within the existing facilities, because right now it's designed around, you know, a 10-person class, and you have a 20-person class. The existing faculty are necessary both for program added students. This is not a class where you can put 40 or 50 students in a class and run the program. This is very much individual instruction. And each of the faculty, this program coordinates very closely with the other programs that are in it, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, and, Alaska, never mind. So, Washington. I'm trying to count them here.
Yeah.
So they're, and what they're doing is they have to coordinate all of their curriculum. Everybody has the same curriculum so that every student from every state goes into the University of Washington with the same background. And so there's a much more integration required, plus then the much more intensive instruction because it's medical school's instruction, not History 101.
Right.
So,
thank you, Ms. Pitney. Any further questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate everyone's willingness to visit a little latitude here, and we need to return to the amendment Senator Wilken made. I think everyone understand what that amendment does, how it would change this bill, return it to the program similar to, same as in the past, the current law. Is there any objection to that amendment?
I don't have an objection to the amendment per se, but I'd like to speak to that amendment.
Yes, please.
First of all, it's probably a good amendment, and I know it's been looked at, but that could be taken care of in the Finance Committee. This is the Education Committee, and that bill will go there next. I don't see why we have to put it in here now. And I know if that's the body's wish to do that, we can do it. But I'm more concerned about, do we support the program enough that we, as the Education Committee, is ready to pass this bill out of here so we can go on and get that extensive work that it needs in finance, not here.
Thank you, Senator Davis. I appreciate those comments. But certainly feel if the committee wants to make that clear to finance, we can do that, and they can do what they want with it when it gets to that level. So, again, any objection to this amendment? If not, the bill has been amended. We have several people that want to speak to us. Any further comments or questions before we go to public testimony? Mr. Hogan, Mike Hogan from Alaska Physicians. And are you with us, Mr. Hogan?
I am, Senator. I'm actually here to answer any questions you might have.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize. Yes, okay. Thank you very much. Well, I guess the question might be, what do you think of this bill?
Well, I think the bill is very timely. There was an excellent article in the Daily News this morning about the hearings that were conducted yesterday morning. Senator Murkowski attended. We are in a bit of a pickle here in this state, and we're going to have to do everything we can to try to attract as many new doctors to the state as we can, as well as producing our own. I think this is one piece of the puzzle, and I urge that you pass it.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan. Are you in a position to encourage the other solutions that are in this securing an adequate number of physicians report that indicates we need to do work in other areas like retaining current physicians and attracting new physicians? Do you favor those issues as well?
We do, actually. My association is part of a group called Alaskans for Access to Healthcare, and it's a coalition of hospitals and physician associations, and that's really our reason for being. So we fully intend to look at the ideas of physician recruitment and continuing to make Alaska a better place to practice medicine.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hogan. Appreciate your time and the efforts you're putting into this major issue facing all of Alaska. Jim Jordan with AMA. Mr. Jordan?
Mr.
Yes.
Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry. If you'll hold on just 1 minute, Mr. Jordan. Senator Olson.
Mr. Hogan, can you tell me how many people that are registered with the Alaska Physicians and Surgeons membership actually are former WAMI students?
Senator, through the chair, I am really not sure, but I know that the physicians who have been through the program, most of them think very fondly of it, and it's a great part of the reason why they are practicing here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Mr. Hogan. And Jim Jordan, please.
Yes, thank you, Senator. I'm Jim Jordan, for the record, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Medical Association. And primarily, I'm here to answer questions. Dr. Roland Gower, our current president, testified last week on SB 73, and essentially the testimony is, I guess I could say in a nutshell, is ditto for HB 18. I must admit that I was also a participant in the task force that presented the report on the physician shortage, and we too at the Alaska State Medical Association are very encouraging of all the other efforts that were listed in the report as to other measures that we need to take in order to not only grow our own physicians, but also engage in active pursuit of recruitment and also active measures to retain those physicians once we either grow them or retain them. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jordan, and I'd hope that this task force would continue because I think that the work you've done is important and the recommendations you've made are just essential that we pay attention to them, and I think it'd be a shame if the task force ended without pursuing those other solutions as well.
Senator Stevens, if I may comment?
Yes, please.
I also agree that such a task force needs to continue, and it needs to be, I think, very agile. And if you'll also note, in the report, there was in essence, a laundry list of issues that really need a lot of work. For example, the one that pops to mind is that there was no definitive work done identifying the particular specialties that are a real acute need. And, you know, that is something that absolutely has to be done if, in fact, we're going to move ahead and actively recruit physicians in those specialty practice areas that are so needed.
Well, thank you, Mr. Jordan. So is it your experience that if we do, in fact, add ten additional physicians in the WAMI program or 10 positions in the WAMI program, that and all the studies are, what we've heard is that probably 7 of those might return to Alaska. How does that do in solving the problem we're facing? What is that sort of like a Band-Aid, or is it really moving us forward?
Well, I think, you know, that Mr. Chair, that was discussed a great deal at the task force. And, you know, for lack of a better term, I'm going to quote Johnny Appleseed. If you grow your own, you don't have to replant them at a later date. And the WAMI program has been a marked success over the years with its return rate. And I believe, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe that WAMI's return rate is better than the return rate for public university medical schools to their home state. So, I think that it's a
it's part of the solution. It's not the entire solution, but I do think that it's an important element that we do grow our own.
Thank you. Mr. Jordan, could you comment on the governor's new health care council, how these two groups can work together? Does one eliminate the other? Any thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, I don't have any thoughts right off the top of my head at this point. Unfortunately, I've been traveling. I've been in Washington, D.C., dealing with some of the other issues that play on the workforce shortages in this state as well as across the country. So I would like to defer, if I might.
Well, certainly. And thank you very much, Mr. Jordan, for your comments, for your participation. The question, yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Jordan, I'm sure the task force talked about and discussed and examined thoroughly the proposition of expanding our university system to have a medical school. Could you just give us a 60-second burst on what the parameters were that you boilerplated down?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I believe that the discussion in regards to the expansion of the University of Alaska to include a full medical school was one that, a full discussion was really outside the scope of the task force. However, what was agreed upon and was included in the report was that is certainly an element that needs to be looked at. And of course, there are a lot of various factors that would be involved in developing a standalone medical school. Obviously cost being one, but also, sufficiency of recruitment of faculty, recruitment of adjunct clinical faculty. All of those issues play in. And, frankly, I think there are problems when you're looking at adjunct clinical faculty in that, it's hard when you have an existing shortage of physicians to think about, tasking those physicians with also educational duties. So that's it in a nutshell.
So if I sum that up, would you say right now, in your opinion, it's in the too hard to do box?
I don't think it's in the too hard to do box, but I think it's something that can't be done in the short term. I think it's going to take some more concerted study in the longer term.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Huggins, and thank you, Mr. Jordan. It's a very interesting question, and one we need to look into, I think, in the future. Maybe it's a long ways into the future, but we are among several small states that do not have medical schools, but it's an enormous project to look at. Yes, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Jordan, I'm not sure whether to ask you the question or whether to ask Mr. Hogan the question, but as we look at the headlines this morning about the physician shortage, I was wondering if you could be more specific and give us an idea as to whether the shortage is lopsided in favor of the family physicians that are out there doing primary care, the specialists, or the subspecialties.
Through the chair, Dr. Olson, excuse me, Senator Olson, I believe, in general, the most acute shortage is in the area of primary care, in family practice physicians, and particularly in general internal medicine, where the shortages are particularly acute. For example, I've not done a count lately, but I believe currently in the Anchorage area, as an example, there are about 18 or 19 general internal medicine physicians, and that compares to about twice that many 3 years ago. And this is at a time when we have an increasing number of folks that are moving into the Medicare system, where that is the specialty that most efficaciously handles and takes care of our senior citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much, Mr. Jordan. Appreciate all of your efforts in this area, and hope that this task force will continue. Let's go on then to Dennis Valenzino. Mr. Valenzino is with the Miami program and also a member, I believe, of this committee. Is that right, Mr. Valenzino?
Valenzino. Yes, my name is Dennis Valenzino. I'm the director of the Miami program at UAA. And just to give you a little perspective, I've been involved with medical education for about 30 years at a variety of institutions, medical schools across the country. I was also a member of the Physician Supply Task Force. I just have a couple of things that I'd like to mention to the committee. One is that my perspective coming here to this program is that, first of all, it's an excellent program that the state has at its disposal. And really, those of us who work with the program view the program as functioning as Alaska's medical school. So rather than saying we don't have a medical school, we prefer to say we don't have an independent medical school. And we work very hard to fulfill that role for the state as long as it's our mission. The other two things are, first of all, it's very apparent to me that this class size increase is needed and will at least significantly help to address the physician shortage. But I think I would suggest that you be careful about how you think about the interest accrual issue, because it will have an impact on the kinds of physicians that you have available for the state. And just to illustrate that, I might mention that one of our first year students who's currently in WAMI had the opportunity yesterday to talk to address a U.S. Senate hearing. And she commented on the prospect of coming out of medical school with a debt of almost $100,000. Her goal is to go into family practice or rural medicine. But she also knows that it's difficult to earn a living in those practices. And if she comes out with a debt of $100,000 or more, she's very concerned that she may have to change her selection of specialty in order to pay off that debt. So the issues are not completely independent.
Thank you. I appreciate those comments and understand what you're saying. Any questions, Mr. Valenzino? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Mr. Valenzino, Charlie Huggins here. The two additional faculty members, what would their qualifications and functions be?
The additional faculty members help us to deal with a couple of issues in the program. One is that particularly in the Introduction to Clinical Medicine course, the faculty are involved very much one-on-one with students. For example, students videotape sessions with real patients or standardized patients posing as actors. And then the faculty go through those tapes individually and evaluate them and make suggestions. The faculty also have to go out and find patients who are constantly changing, the population is changing in the hospital, for the patients to interview. So there's a lot of individual attention there. There's a lot of individual attention in the laboratory courses, such as the anatomy courses, that are done. And then we also have an issue right now where the knowledge base is changing so fast in medicine that it's very difficult for one faculty member to maintain expertise in more than one field. So at the moment, we, for example, have one faculty member teaching three different courses in the curriculum. And that's really, we're on the edge of sustainability of that with 10 students. The additional work that would be posed by 20 students in the class, because these are not just undergraduate students listening to lectures. They come in, they talk with the faculty a lot. They're trying to master their subject. And that would simply push us over the edge on that sort of a situation. At other WAMI sites, those courses might be taught by a half a dozen or more faculty.
Yeah, follow-up, Mr. Thank you very much for that answer. Follow-up-wise, as I recall, there is language that says up to 3 years of the education can happen in Alaska. Is that kind of true or almost true?
That is true.
That is true. And yeah. So most students do about 3 years' worth of education here?
WAMI functions as a real collaboration amongst the five states. So the option is available to do up to 3 years in Alaska. And we have had students who have done that. Many times students who do intend to come back and practice here would prefer to do some of their experiences in the third and fourth year in other states so that they learn more about how medicine is practiced elsewhere so they can bring back some of those practices when they go into practice here.
Yeah, thank you. And one more follow-up. Of a person that does the 3 years, what size faculty comes in contact with that student on your campus?
The 3 years would not be done on our campus. The first year is done on our campus. The second year is in Seattle. And then the third and fourth years are done at clinical sites throughout the state. Many of them are Anchorage. Some of them are in Fairbanks, Wrangell, they may have a few other experiences. Those are the main sites that we use right now for those clinical experiences.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you have faculty members that travel to those sites to oversee or quality control, or am I wrong?
Those faculty that do that traveling typically come from a combination, usually are from the University of Washington.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Other questions? Thank you. Yep, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Venezuela Valenzino, one of the questions I have is, before you go on from the basic science portion to the clinical aspect, are these students required to pass part one of the national boards?
They have to pass part one after their second year.
So they are not allowed to go on to the clinical years until after they've passed part one?
That's correct.
Okay, the next question I have is, are you on the, Mr. Chairman, if I could?
Yes, please, Senator.
Are you on the admissions committee?
No, I'm not.
Okay. In your experience, obviously my sensitivity is not just for the areas of primary care that have been addressed and answered by Mr. Jordan, but also the number of physicians that are out in rural Alaska having practiced there for a number of years. How many rural students have been accepted into the WAMI program over the last year that come from rural Alaska?
Well, we have students, for example, just off the top of my head, the last 2 years who have come from Kodiak. The map, when I plotted the map of where our students come from, they span the state, and they really do look pretty much to me like they represent geographically the population of the state.
And is that number, are the number of students that are coming out of rural Alaska, are there many of that are qualified to go ahead and submit a substantial application?
It's sometimes a struggle to find students with qualifications, but I think we've done a pretty good job over the years. I could send you that information if you'd like, Senator.
If you would, if you have the numbers as far back as 5 years, I'd appreciate that as the number of students that have come from rural Alaska that have been accepted into the WAMI program.
I'll find that for you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. So are you saying, do you anticipate a problem filling the 20 slots if we were to pass this piece of legislation?
Past 2 years, we've had 80 applicants, and at least 30 of them are well qualified.
Okay, thank you very much. Further questions, Mr. Valenzino? Thank you, sir. I appreciate your being with us today.
Thank you.
Suzanne Trick, are you with us, Ms. Trick?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Yes, please identify yourself for the record, please. You're with the University of Washington.
Yes, that's correct. For the record, my name is Suzanne Trick, and I'm the Regional Programs Director for the University of Washington School of Medicine for Alaska. I would like to just answer any questions you might have and would be happy to talk to you a little bit about the interest accrual beginning at the end of medical school, as that actually did come from our portion of the WAMI program, ought to have that changed.
Yes, Ms. Trigger, please just go ahead and discuss that if you would.
Okay. At the University of Washington School of Medicine and with our partner, WAMI State, we always are looking at ways to provide a physician workforce for the states in which we have the partnership. The 84% real return on investment that we use and we discuss is really an outcome that we are very proud of and that we work toward, and is actually represents the return rate before any of the service obligations for Alaska comes into play. So while this service obligation has been in place for some time, graduates of the program are that up to right now have not been under the service obligation. So that return rate is pre-service obligation. We feel that, we felt that there's this huge balancing act of trying to make sure that we have enough going into primary care, that we get the return rate we need, and that we have a very vibrant applicant pool. Because as we look to increase the WAMI class size, we're looking at what do certain things, how do certain policy decisions impact the applicant pool, and how do certain policy decisions impact what specialty WAMI students choose. So while they have this interest rate forgiven, at the point they are choosing their specialty, they may not take that into consideration. We have another state who has a service obligation, and their applicant pool is not nearly as robust as ours is. And we are not sure, but we feel that there are some choices that they made that perhaps have impacted the applicant pool from that state. So we're concerned when we start going in and changing things about what, you know, that might impact the student's choice. Now, 6 years ago, 36% of the WAMI students upon graduation chose a primary care residency program. Today, that is at 12%, and that has us greatly concerned. We believe that the amount of student debt that they're looking at impacts the choices that they make for specialty. And here in Alaska, we want them to go into primary care. So I know I've been a little bit long-winded. I really haven't hit all the issues regarding why the interest rate, we would like it to begin after residency. But one of the major reasons is that we would like students to go into primary care. We feel that their concept of the amount of debt that they will have will impact their choice.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Drake. Could you comment on the the 20 slots, if there are 20 slots, positions from Alaska, the impact on the University of Washington program, and is that acceptable and something that you're prepared to accommodate?
Yes, we are prepared to accommodate that.
How many students do enter the University Medical School annually?
I think it's right at 182. And that's from all of the states, the five states.
Right, right. Thank you very much. Good question, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Trick, in relationship to primary care, numbers of physicians, is there another way to get at that instead of worrying about the interest rate, looking at an incentive program?
Yes.
What would you recommend?
Well, I think that, you know, I am not the expert on incentive programs, but I believe that there could be recruitment packages that might be put together for students or for physicians who choose to practice in a rural and underserved community. There are federal choice, you know, federal avenues that we're participating in terms of National Health Service Corps and Indian Health Service scholarship programs to, you know, to put those back in place.
Yeah,
so we do believe there are recruitment efforts that we believe that that's also part of the package for the physician workforce solution for Alaska.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Ms. Trick, let me ask you. Yesterday, I think Senator Murkowski was discussing some of those parameters for incentives for primary care, and one of them was, as I recall, was a $1,000 tax credit per year or per month.
Yes, that's correct.
You think that would work?
You know, I wish I could tell you definitively if I think it would work. I mean, logically, it seems like it would work, but I don't have an independent date on that. Someone else might have a better answer.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tricker. Are you familiar with the Health Resources Services Administration match for doctor's loan repayment? Are you familiar with that at all?
Mr. Chairman, no, I'm not.
Maybe we can ask. Ms. Behrens about that in a bit. Then, thank you very much, Mr. Tricker. Any further questions?
I have a question.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Senator Davis.
Thank you. It's more of a statement than a question. Just a few minutes ago, Senator Olson asked for information about how many rural students over the last 5 years that might have entered into the program. I'd like to expand that and have more information added to that and make it be minority students in general as well.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Is that a possible then?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I know we have that information. I don't have it with me right now.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Strick. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Davis. Any further comments? Let's go on to Ray Bailey then, also with the WAMI program. Mr. Bailey, are you with us?
Good morning.
Good morning. And,
thank you to the committee for allowing me to testify. My name is Ray Bailey, and I'm a professor in the WAMI program. I've worked for WAMI full-time for the past 30 years, first in Fairbanks and now in Anchorage. I'm calling primarily to encourage you to support this legislation. Also, I'm calling to be available to answer any questions. I don't think there's any question that we need more physicians in Alaska, and that WAMI has been a major pipeline that has helped provide those physicians. But mostly I want to talk about other things and answer questions if you have them. I'm a member of the committee that certifies Alaskans for eligibility to the program, and I know there's sometimes some concern that non-Alaskans somehow gain entrance, and I'm also on the admissions committee, so I have some information there. Primarily, I wanted to talk about the importance of WAMI to Alaska and what I've seen happen over the past 30 years all over the state. I don't think WAMI is all about the 10 students that we accept each year or the 20 that we might accept next year or the year after. It's really about what those students mean to Alaska and the infrastructure that's built up since then. We have over 125 physicians now in Alaska that work with these students. They're all over the state. Even though we have a physician shortage, these folks still find time to work in the clinical years with our students. We have enough clinical placements in the state to cover all of our students if they all wish to come here. But some of our students go to Wyoming or Seattle or Montana to do special clinical training in areas like OB or neurology or family practice. They also have all those opportunities up here in Alaska. So I think the WAMI program, more than anything, has enhanced the ability for our doctors in Alaska to deliver health care. Our doctors are better because all these students are hanging around. Our students in the first year do preceptorships with local physicians. Those physicians do a better job at history taking and taking their notes and prescribing the medications because they're our students. Our third and fourth year students are doing clinical training, and I'm confident that those physicians are also very, very professional, and perhaps more professional than if this program wasn't here. Additionally, when new physicians come to Alaska, we constantly are fielding calls from them because they want to help. They want to see what they can do to help with the health education in this state. So even though doctors are pressed and we do have a shortage, these physicians are quite willing to help out, and because of that, we're able to train a lot of students in a lot of different areas, certainly every single required area, and we're able to do everything, I think, in Alaska except for year two, as Dr. Valenzino indicated. I think it's because WAMI also is a recruiting tool to bring new physicians to Alaska. I believe that some physicians come here because they recognize that there is a medical school in Alaska, and they would respect that Alaska would have a better health care delivery system because of it. But I think you've heard a lot of this already, so primarily I just wanted to be available to answer any questions if you had any.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey. I certainly appreciate your comments. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor, I just want to go ahead and make a comment as to what he said. Certainly as a practicing physician with a student watching over your shoulder when you're trying to when you're going out there and teaching them, these students are bright, they're sharp, and they do ask questions, and you are on your best behavior when you have somebody like that that is being a constant reminder as to why you're trying to do your best. But the question I have, Mr. Chairman, if I could, is Dr. Bailey is a former director of the WAMI program, and looking at the number of years, what is the gravitational changes that are going on? Because back when I was more involved or went to school there in Fairbanks under you, there the clinical year was one of the years that was spent outside, and the first two basic science years were here in the state of Alaska. Why is it that has changed, and is there the gravitation toward trying to go ahead and bring that second year back up to Alaska?
Well, it would be possible to bring a second year back to Alaska. There's many ways to train medical students in the first 2 years. In a lot of medical schools, the second year is another year of basic science courses like pharmacology and pathology and endocrinology and things like that. UW does it slightly differently, so to bring their second year here would be more difficult. I think the big change in WAMI, though, is the introduction of all this clinical training. When you were in Fairbanks and when I was there, mostly it was 10 students, and the opportunity for those students to do clerkship, to do preceptorships in a few areas. We did have a clinical program in psychiatry, and since then we've added a number of third-year clinical clerkships. We're constantly trying to add more. It serves our own best interests, and actually UW has so many students that half of their students now, or half of their clinical training, is done outside of the UW area. One of the biggest assets of the WAMI program has been the development of these clerkships. We do every required one for the third year. The fourth year ones are elective, and they can be specially arranged. Many of our students do that. There are special tracks within WAMI where students can do that in addition. I think if we add 20 more students or 10 more students so that we have 20, there's going to be further pressure for even more of this clinical training opportunity.
Senator Olson?
And you don't see a problem with the clinical years being flogged with the same problems we see elsewhere, where you have a number of patients in general that you see to go ahead and give you the variety of diseases to expose these students to get ready to practice, as well as clinical staff that are willing to go ahead and participate and teach?
Well, I think that's a major concern that we all have, but our surgical training opportunities in Fairbanks, I think when we think of a hospital like Fairbanks, we shouldn't just think of Fairbanks as a small community. Actually, it's the hub for maybe half of Alaska and represents a phenomenally large geographic area. So there's a variety of folks that represent a variety of health problems coming from a huge area that would go there. But certainly that is a concern. You do need to have an appropriate number of patients with an acceptable variety of important conditions to be able to train students properly. But we're a big state now. I think we do have that. There's other states. Take West Virginia, for example. It's in a populated area, but I think West Virginia has a population not more than 1 million people, and it has 3 medical schools. I think we do have the ability to have a medical school here, and it doesn't have to be a standalone medical school. My major concern is some sort of cost-neutral relationship where we're not sending money outside, that instead we're using that money here to train our own physicians. There might be a way, for instance, to continue cooperation with the other WAMI states and with UW. UW could even be a mother campus for this program. It seems that a lot of the concerns actually are fiscal concerns.
My last
Senator Olson.
Request, Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Yes.
As a member, I thought I heard you say you were a member of the admissions committee. I'm assuming you're one of the three?
Correct.
Can you get the number of rural students that have been admitted to the program for the last 5 years and the number of minority students that was requested by Senator Davis to my office, to both of our offices, please?
Yeah, we can, Senator Olson, I think we could do that right away. But a quick answer to that question is, like Dr. Palencino said, quite a few. This year, for instance, we have two Native Alaskans in the program, one from Ketchikan and one from Cold Bay. We emphasize rural students. I was surprised by the by your question earlier. Are rural students well enough prepared to do well in the application process? It turns out that a lot of our rural applicants are more cerebral than others. They do real well. Rural folks seem to be our future leaders. We also think that rural folks more likely return to the state of Alaska to practice once trained. So the admissions committee is kind of high on rural students.
Dr. Bailey, thank you.
And we have been for a long time.
Dr. Bailey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bailey. And whoever gets that report, would you see that Ian gets a copy and we'll distribute it to everyone on the committee?
We'll see that that's done. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bailey. All right, let's since we have sort of strayed into the issue of loan assistance and loan debt and all that, Ms. Behrens, would you mind coming back and telling us about other assistance that might be available to these doctors as they've completed their education? And Senator Wilkin has just made a note, given me a note about the Health Resource Services Administration match. Could you speak to that, please?
Yes. For the record, my name is Diane Behrens, Executive Director of the Postsecondary Commission, and I did take my homework assignment seriously, Mr. Chair. I did some research and spoke with the administrator of Washington's Student Loan Repayment Program, and she was very helpful. The Health Resources and Services Administration does offer a state federal loan repayment program. It's subject to appropriation at the federal level. It does offer a dollar-for-dollar match. States must annually apply for those federal funds. Issues around that for in terms of meeting state-specific needs, the federal government does have specific criteria as to what type of clinician will qualify, the settings for their practice, and as the administrator in Washington indicated, they actually have a much larger state loan repayment program because the federal program only gets to a piece of their state need. If, for instance, you have to be family practitioner in order to qualify. You need to practice in a public or not-for-profit setting. And in the event that there is not enough funds to cover all eligible applicants, there is a point system for where those funds are directed. So it may be a little bit too prescriptive to meet all of Alaska's needs, but I do, in speaking with Senator Wilkin's staff about it, I think a carefully crafted Alaska student loan repayment program could be designed to capture to the extent that it could those federal dollars.
Very interesting. Thank you very much. Further questions on that? Thank you, Ms. Behrens. Appreciate your comments. I was going to mention about Dr. Bailey's comments about how maybe medical school might not be that far off. An interesting thought that maybe there are ways to provide more facilities, better facilities, and more greater numbers without an enormous amount of money. Well, thank you all very much. I appreciate the discussion. Have we left anybody out? Anybody in the audience who cares to speak to this issue that hasn't had a chance to? Certainly want to thank Senator Ellis for introducing the Senate Bill 73, which led to this discussion. And And now that we have the companion bill from the House, we're going to be dealing with that. I guess that one issue that that we haven't, I'm not sure we can really solve right now, is the university fiscal note that we've heard from the university that this is a very real problem, and that passing this without realization of what it would cost the university might not really solve the issue. And so I assume that we'll continue, the finance will deal with that. I'm not sure we need to add a university fiscal note at this point, but hopefully it'll be considered later. Any questions or comments, Senator Wilkin? Did you have something to say?
On the bill itself?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I had a comment.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we considered Senator Ellis's bill, we talked about a loan repayment program. And at the risk of being maybe somewhat too forward, this bill is really just a token for what we really need. I mean, it makes us feel good, and we need 10 more doctors, and but the report says we need 59. And so this is just a step in the right direction. And money talks, and these folks come out of their residency with an average of $137,000 in debt. I think that we need to talk about recognizing that debt and encouraging doctors to come here, and we'll forgive that debt outside of WAMI. And I have an amendment that we talked about with Senator Ellis's bill, and I won't offer that today. But I would just for the record say one more time, because of personal experience with Sheila's son, and Sheila's son, who just graduated from Harvard Medical School, for 4 months had 3 to 5 letters a week asking him to come to practice around the world as a doctor in infectious medicine. So that's the competition, real life competition that we have. And if we can do something like loan forgiveness, as basic as that is, to help us supply those 59 doctors that are only going to grow in need, then that's what we're going to do. So I just want to put that on the record. And I've been for years one that didn't want to tap the student loan program because of the hemorrhaging of cash we had in the early 90s. But this the program is on good foundation now, and clearly the state has a need for doctors. So I'll leave that. I'm told by folks that there's going to be an access task force, Mr. Chairman, and I don't know if there's someone in the audience that can tell us about that, but it's been indicated to me that they'll take up the issue of loan repayment. And I wonder if there is someone that could talk about the plan for that.
Yes, please, if you'd come forward. And
and those are my comments, and thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Well, thank you, Senator Wilkin. And just let me say, I appreciate you not adding that amendment to this bill. It's a very clear, clean bill that we're sending forward, but I really encourage you to continue on that, and we'll do everything we can to assist through this committee. Thank you. Yes, sir. If you identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Rod Beatty, President of the Alaska Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Specifically with respect to Senator Wilkin's question about an access task force, we've tried to address how would we keep these task force recommendations moving forward and flesh them out and actually bring those that look the best and cost them and put a time frame to them for you to consider and not feel like you just dealt with this one issue and the rest wasn't properly attended to. There have been discussions with the department about that. Clearly the governor's created this healthcare strategies council, and there is a desire to see most of the health related issues flow through that process. But we also don't think that that process will come up quick enough or be able to deal with a lot of issues over the life of its existence. So we had proposed that the access group, which you heard earlier is includes a hospital association, Providence, two physician groups, keep this alive. Two of us on the access group were on the task force, and there are others that we could pull in from the task force and bring to the table and continue our work. And we've talked to the department, and the commissioner's here today, I think she could confirm that, about whether that would be acceptable to her, and that we then coordinate with the department and with the university, which was the other major player in this, to make sure that our data analysis is good, that they agree with it, and that as we come forward with those final conclusions, that it's something that they could support. So we think that that would be a good approach. It would require a little bit of funding to make that happen, and we've talked to the sponsor of the bill, and he's indicated some interest in pursuing that. So that would be our recommendation at this point. And if I might make one other comment that I made when I spoke to Senate Bill 73, but it's also true with this, House Bill 18. The task force report spoke to a need for 59 additional physicians net gain annually, and we currently have 38 net gain annually. And I presume 8 of those would be coming out of the current WAMI program. The others are the result of recruitment efforts going on currently in the state. So we need to fill a hole of 20 per year through 2025 to get where we need to be. So is this a little or a big step? I guess it's somewhere in between in my mind, because once it's fully mature and you're getting out 7 years and they're coming out of residency and practicing, 10 out of the 20 that we need would be, or 8, I guess, if you go by the current numbers, would be coming from the WAMI expansion. And I think that's a pretty good result. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Rod. I certainly appreciate your years of devotion to this problem and to helping us find a solution to it. Thanks very much for all your efforts. Any questions, comments? Thank you, Rod. Anyone else we have not heard from? Yes, ma'am. You'd come forward, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Carlene Jackson, Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services. I appreciate the work you're doing on this issue and was privileged to be a part of the HELP hearing yesterday that Senator Murkowski did. And the one other fact I would share with you from that you may know is that Alaska, compared to the rest of the nation, ranks 6th lowest in terms of the number of physicians to population. And outside of Anchorage, Alaska ranks dead last compared to the rest of the nation in terms of physicians compared to the number of the population. So I really believe this bill is important. To speak to the issue of the task force, which I think did some tremendous work, and of course President Mark Hamilton from the university and I did commission the Physician Supply Task Force to do this work. Part of the reason that we really focused on adding the WAMI seats as the next step is that's an action we can take that's a long-term strategy that if we don't take now, we'll be that much further behind. In terms of keeping the task force going, my personal bias is we need to be doing real action-oriented steps. And I absolutely support handing this off to the access group to continue the work, but I can't in good conscience have the staff in my department put resources towards continuing the task force at this point in time. Our work will be working on the Healthcare Strategies Council, and that will be about rolling up this work, Commonwealth North's work, and all the other planning groups that have been out there. So we absolutely support what's happening. We want to see this happen, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Well, thank you, Ms. Jackson, for your comments, and Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Carlene, the governor's announcement of a body, could you tell us what the name of the body is and sort of a task list of how you see that shaking out?
Through the chair, certainly, Senator Huggins. The name of the group is the Healthcare Strategies Council, and the task of that group will be fourfold. First, they're going to look at what's out there in terms of our healthcare system. There are so many components, from setting rates and how we try to keep the cost down to things that we do for access to care and quality of care. And so first they'll inventory what's out there. They'll look at what the gaps are. And then the biggest piece of their work will be to take all the different reports and studies that have already occurred that have done great work and pick out those action items that can be taken to develop a short and a long-term action plan for Alaska. And that, I think, is going to be key to not missing any pieces of what's already going on and not being redundant about our planning. And then finally, what they'll do is come up with some recommended performance evaluation measures so that we not only have strategies and timelines, but we have a way to evaluate. We add 10 more WAMI seats to our program for Alaska. What's the outcome of that? How do we know we spent our money wisely? And so in a nutshell, that's what it will be. This group of people is going to be, I'm sure, the same cast of characters involved in many of the other planning groups, but they will be able to take those other planning efforts and bring them all together.
Senator Huggins?
And will there be some public members that are maybe, quote, non-professionals?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, yes, I would expect so. And in addition to the membership of that council, there will be a conference where there will be opportunity for public input. And I think that public input is really key. The Senate Help Committee yesterday, I think the most compelling testimony was the WAMI students that stood up and said, we love Alaska, we want to come back, but we're scared about how we're going to be able to afford to do it. And it's that kind of public testimony we're also going to want for this council.
Right. And one final.
Mr. Huggins?
The duration of the council, is there a closed-in system that we're looking at, or
through the chair, Senator Huggins? Yes, there is. It's an aggressive timeline, I must admit, but the plan is for this group to present to the governor and the legislature their recommendations by January of 2008. And at that point, their work will be complete.
Well, thanks for all your hard work on this task.
Well, through the chair, thank you, Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Certainly appreciate that, and I second that, and I'm sure we are just at the beginning of many, many discussions on this issue, and I appreciate all your efforts.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Many other people have put a lot of work in, and I thank all of them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? If not, I would request a motion, Senator Huggins.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that CS for House Bill number 18, version Kilo, as amended with individual comments and attached physical note, be moved from committee.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Is there any objection to that? We will move that on then to Hess Committee. Senator Davis, you will have it momentarily. Any further thing to come before us? If not, the meeting is adjourned.